Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. I'm David Bose, your host. In this podcast, we'll explore how new information from the complete sequencing of the gorilla genome has challenged conventional thinking about human ancestry, and how neo-Darwinists are using some old verbal tricks to minimize the impact of this new information. Here to talk about it with me is the Discovery Institute's Casey Luskin. Casey, how has the complete sequencing of the gorilla genome shook up what was previously asserted to be known about the phylogeny of humans and gorillas?
Well, the standard view of the relationships of humans and other apes is that humans and chimpanzees are most closely related to one another, and then gorillas come off as a side group, kind of like you are most closely related to your brother or sister, but then your cousin is a more distant relation to both of you. That's the way that it's usually looked at in the relationship of humans, apes, and gorilla. But now that they sequenced the gorilla genome, they realized that 30% of the gorilla genome contradicts the standard phylogeny of humans and apes. Essentially, it turns out that about 15% of the gorilla genome is more closely related to humans than humans are to chimps, and another 15% of the gorilla genome is more closely related to chimps than chimps are to humans. So basically, it would be like finding that some of your genes are actually more similar to your cousin than to your brother or sister. It does not fit with the standard phylogenetic view of humans and apes.
So now this tells us that part of us is closer to a gorilla and another part of us is closer to a chimp.
That's exactly what these findings say. And of course, when we say closer, we're simply talking about the percent sequence similarity of our genes or our DNA to a chimp or a gorilla, respectively. We're not saying anything more than just percent sequence similarity. The addition of common ancestry, that's an additional assumption they have to make. But basically, the bottom line here is that there is not a clear signal of ancestral relationships that is coming out of the gorilla genome once you add it into the mix.
When new research is said to shed light on some aspect of evolutionary theory, what typically does that really mean?
Well, this is kind of a funny story. A couple years ago, Eugenie Scott, who's the executive director of the National Center for Science Education, she had this interview where she kind of served as a media coach for other scientists talking about evolution. And she was encouraging folks in that interview to never say that some evolutionary theory has been falsified, say that it, quote unquote, sheds light on the evolution of this or that structure. And so whenever we see terms like sheds light, it always kind of causes a little red flag to go off in my mind and makes me wonder, well, maybe there's some evolutionary hypothesis that's been kind of messed up by this new discovery. And in fact, we saw the term sheds light, quote unquote, used all over the place with the sequencing and the discovery of the full sequence of the gorilla genome here. So that's what piqued my interest. And then lo and behold, you dig deeper and you find out that huge portions of the gorilla genome, 30%, that amounts to literally hundreds of millions of base pairs of DNA, does not jive with the standard alleged phylogeny of humans and apes.
So in other words, this time, instead of saying it looks like we got the ancestry of human beings wrong, instead, the line is, this is shedding new light on what we already knew about human ancestry.
Yeah, it's shedding light. You know, there's never a challenge to evolutionary claims. It simply is shedding new light. That's right.
Why does being genetically closer to apes in some genes, but closer to chimpanzees in others, cause problems for evolutionary theory?
Well, if you're a systematist studying genes, if you're a molecular phylogeneticist, what you want is to have a consistent signal of evolutionary relationships. You want one gene that gives you a particular phylogeny to be consistent with a phylogeny coming from a different gene. And when all these different genes are sort of pointing to the same evolutionary tree, that supposedly is going to give you confidence that your evolutionary phylogeny is correct. So the reason why this causes a problem is because it shows that different genes are telling different evolutionary stories. One gene gives you one version of the alleged phylogeny of humans, gorillas, and chimps, and other apes, and another gene gives you a very different phylogeny. So again, there's not a clear and consistent picture of evolutionary relationships coming out here. At a more methodological or fundamental level, the problem that this means is that biological similarity does not always indicate a more close evolutionary relationship. Really, the fundamental assumption that goes into building these trees is that the more similar someone's DNA is to another organism, that indicates a more close evolutionary relationship. But clearly, when some genes are more closely related to one organism and another gene is more closely related to another, then they're not all telling the same story. It's not always the case that a more similar genome indicates a more close evolutionary relationship. So some of the fundamental assumptions that go into tree building are called into question when you find these kinds of conflicts between evolutionary trees that's coming out of this gorilla genome.
Now, some have tried to explain these problems away with an interbreeding explanation where somewhere back there, human ancestors and chimp ancestors and gorilla ancestors, there was some kind of interbreeding going on, and that's how the strange genome similarity can be explained. What are your thoughts on that?
Basically, they try to explain away this bad data by claiming that millions of years ago, there were populations of chimps and humans and gorillas that were interbreeding after the initial splits of their respective lines, and that sort of messes up the phylogenetic signal. Some genes share a different common ancestor with chimps or gorillas than other genes, essentially. That's the claim. Perhaps that's a possible explanation. It may even be plausible. I would say it's almost impossible to test. Anytime that you find bad data that conflicts with the genome, we just attribute this to incomplete lineage sorting and interbreeding between humans and chimps and gorillas after the initial splits. Basically, it allows you to accommodate any data that conflicts with your alleged evolutionary tree. You kind of wonder, well, how solid and robust and how seriously are we supposed to take your evolutionary tree to begin with if any data that conflicts with it can just be explained away in this fashion?
Among the recent findings in the ape genome was that the genes thought to be necessary for speech are not actually related to speech. Now, how does that impact evolutionary theory?
Yeah, so what's interesting is that we found that one of the gorilla genes, which conflicted with the standard primate phylogeny, was highly similar to a human gene, which was thought by evolutionists to be involved in the origin of human speech. Obviously, gorillas don't talk. So if this gorilla gene really is highly similar to the human version, then it stands to reason that those human genes may not be as important for the evolution of speech after all. So it sort of threw a little bit of a problem into this story of how human speech evolved. Not a huge story, but it's an interesting thing that came out of this overall discovery that was being made with the gorilla genome.
So we're told that human beings are still 98% gorilla. Why is the percentage argument just a cop-out?
The percent similarity between one organism and another does not necessarily demonstrate common ancestry. Why should 98% similarity demonstrate common ancestry? Then we can reasonably ask, at what point does the percent similarity stop demonstrating common ancestry? 95%, 90%, 80%? We're 50% banana, after all, when you look at some of our genes. So really, the percent similarity doesn't tell you anything about whether or not you're actually related to an organism if you're willing to think outside the Darwinian box. Once you realize that things like functional constraints or common design could also lead you to have similar genome sequences, there's no reason that similar DNA has to dictate that that DNA was inherited from a common ancestor. After all, designers will regularly reuse parts that work and programs that work in different designs. We see using wheels on both cars and airplanes, or keyboards on both cell phones and computers, or computer programmers will regularly reuse code in different programs that performs a certain function that they need. So why is it necessarily the case that similar DNA, similar genetic programs, have to be the result of common ancestry? Why can't they be the result of common design, where a designer is reusing parts that work in different organisms? So the percent similarity, or the fact that you are similar to another organism or another structure, that could point to common design just as much as common descent.
I was thinking the same thing about chemicals. You could have one chemical that's 98% similar to another chemical, but they might be wildly different in many different ways and outcomes.
There's some truth to that. There are some genes where there is a percent similarity, a very high percent similarity when you look at the DNA sequence, but they perform very different functions in the two different organisms. And so, yeah, these are interesting questions, and definitely percent similarity does not always tell you that you're even looking at the same function.
How does this ancestry question relate to intelligent design? How does it impact intelligent design theory?
Really, at the end of the day, it doesn't. Intelligent design is compatible with the view that humans share common ancestors with other species. This is not a necessary corollary of intelligent design. ID at its heart claims that unguided natural selection and random mutation is not solely the cause of all of biological complexity. And many biologically complex structures are best explained by an intelligent cause rather than something like natural selection. So at heart, ID challenges more this unguided mechanism of natural selection, random mutation is producing the history of life. You could have common ancestry and yet still have intelligent design. At the same time, once you start to challenge natural selection, and again, once you start to be willing to think outside of the Darwinian box, other possibilities become apparent. And when you look at the arguments that are used to make the case for human-ape common ancestry, they're fundamentally based upon assumptions at the end of the day, not necessarily hard deductions from the data.
That concludes this edition of ID the Future. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. If you would like more information or would like to support the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, please go to idthefuture.com and click the yellow donate button. This podcast is copyright 2012, the Discovery Institute. All rights reserved.